First case in the calendar is 98-104, Gene Wagner versus Roche Laboratories and Huffman Roche. Mr.
Because you handle a lot of these cases, I suspect maybe you're different than some of us, but whenever the doctor prescribes something for you, do you go down to the pharmacy and get a pamphlet on it?
No, Judge.
I've never done that.
That's why the learned intermediary is the doctrine which applies here in the field.
And what is that doctrine?
That doctrine says as follows. Because the care and treatment of a patient or a prescription drug is used, and also much medical terminology, medical knowledge, chemistry, and so forth, that the learned intermediary doctrine and the ceiling was inaugurated, it says that the learned intermediary speaks for, learns for, consents for the patient, because the patient does not have the medical ability to read the insert, package insert, and describe it, prescribe it for herself.
Mr. Arnold, is that in Seeley, it's a failure to warn cause of action, isn't it? And does, so your opponent tells us that for the second cause of action here, the express warranty cause of action, that the learned intermediary is not appropriate, that it has to be the individual reliance for that cause of action. Now, Seeley doesn't address an express warranty tort.
That's incorrect, Your Honor. It does. The question here is based upon common experience and the reasoning in Seeley. I mean, this is true or is it not that the failure to warn and the intermediary doctor being applied there is any difference than express warranty?
Well, is it the term express warranty? Is it, I mean, would every, maybe every patient like your client would not have both an express warranty and a failure to warn potential claims.
So there's two
potential. Mm-hmm. And maybe, and so does your client have an express warranty claim based on a learned intermediary? If you do you say she doesn't have to individually rely on a warranty from the, because in Tony Home Permanent, the plaintiff actually relied, and that was an express warranty tort. So, which is right here? Do we have a? Can we apply a learned intermediary theory to an express warranty claim? Because no case has said that yet here in Ohio.
Well, we should be prepared to do that.
Okay.
And the reason we should be prepared to do that here in Ohio is because patients have no, some patients can't read.
And that gives them a failure to warn claim.
We will cure versus the cat. Shows you some pictures about it and says we will will take care of the horrible thing that you have on your face and your body. Now, if we mix up the judge's approach to the case, and the defendant's suggested approach to the case, we're saying that the patient has to not only rely, reliance means you must rely on information. Otherwise, what good is your reliance? I have to rely on something. She relied on Dr. Burkhart, who relied on Roach. And that's the one that we hear. We can't define how this is an enormous responsibility for learning medicine in a big hurry. And that's what is a serious problem here. With Dr. Burkhart now, with the learned behavior doctrine, which is to me the approach that we should take care of in Ohio. What we have here is he was shown the educational video film of acting tanks throughout the entire country. He read the PDR, he read the brochure, he read the package insert. So a doctor now moves his diploma. We have all opened up our doctor's prescription and a pamphlet falls out. And the treatment is minuscule and the information is confusing to me and confusing to everybody in this state. It makes no sense about the chemical proportion of what I'm taking. So what do I rely on? What do I need to rely on? So the answer's got to be, it's got to be a reliance on that situation. So I find that there was sufficient evidence in the Court of Appeals of Lucas County weighed the evidence when they should not have. I mean, circumstantial evidence is also very good evidence that we acknowledge in Ohio. So when Mrs. Wagner said she looked at the pictures and the doctor said, I talked with her about the brochure, and Dr. Burkhart was quite clear, we talked about her treatment, and Dr. Burkhart further testified she did not object to the treatment. So all those things together, to my view, represent circumstantial evidence at the least and direct evidence that I state that Mrs. Burkhart relied on the promotion that was given to her. And that's where we are with the learned and media remark. And I think it's a fair approach, because otherwise, if we take the flip side of that, what you're saying is everybody can take the prescription drug. Mrs. Burkhart could not take this drug without a prescription. It took a doctor's consent to do it. So if you don't accept the learned and media here, you remove the doctor from the entire treatment picture. And the implications there are enormous and disastrous for Ohio prescription patients. If you take away learned and media from express warranty, what is left?
Failure to warn. Failure to warn?
Or
malpractice, yeah.
If you can prove it. So what we're saying is you have another remedy, you don't have this remedy, and I think that that's inappropriate. So I think it's just the two-issue rule here it applies to this case. I think that Rick's, as cited by the defendant, is inappropriate for the following reason. In Rick's, there was no basis at all, in fact, to discharge an assumption of risk. No reason at all. There were no facts, there was no law. You recall the case a city worker was backed up and he got very angry. And so that's why the court reversed their finding in the trial. Our case is different because they were express warranties that were in the case. In the PDR by Roche Company, by Dr. Burkhart reading the PDR, by looking at the promotional film. So in our case, there was a legal basis to apply instruments for us on express warranty. In Rick's, there was not. In Rick's, was subject to the case that had no substance and no factual basis at all, in fact or in law. That's why there was a reversal error, to accept the proposition that because Rick's reversed on an improper instruction, ergo, Wagner should be reversed on an improper instruction, misapplied, to my view, the two-issue rule. And the two-issue rule is very clear now. And so I believe very strong. And then another thing that I just want to speak to, Judge, was that I see no prejudice here. This has been demonstrated in the briefs I have not found any prejudice. Not within the brief, there was no prejudice demonstrated because there was an express warranty charge that was given.
So it was the express warranty.
That this is a good drug for assisted care. As Dr. Burkhart announced, it had tremendous potential in the field of assisted care.
That's what the photographs portrayed,
yes, it is. And then what we have is part of the record, too. There's an interesting point here that I just want to draw on. If you think we have the best brakes on our car, But that's been the interesting thing. Two people at a time. One reads the warranty, the express warranty. Two, because the brakes failed. The court properly charges that can be recovered on express because the client is defective. A month later, another client sued, has seen none of the advertising, seen none of the promotion, read none of the literature, is continued because of failed brakes. She cannot recover. Why? What's the rationale? And Montfort speaks to this point. Page 228 of Montfort uses an example that way. You say, wait a minute. If you have two people that are claiming, one who has read and realized knowledge, reliance, and the other who has not, you deny the recovery to one for a defective product, is it not so? So what's on trial here is the product, anything. Not the either claim. There was never a claim for misuse or abuse of the product.
Mr. Eiler, if indeed this court were to find that the express warranty instruction should not have been given, that we would, in essence, disagree with you that the learned intermediary plays a role in that cause of action, then would you agree that the Ricks case is applicable?
No. The Ricks case could never apply to this case.
Okay. How else would you distinguish it? I heard you distinguish it on the basis that in Ricks, the instruction should never have been given. But if the instruction were here, the reverse. If it should not have been given in this case, well, then where are we? How do you distinguish
you're
Ricks?
Here because what you did is you sharpened up Ricks. What you said is Ricks is an aberrant case or injected into a case with something where there is no evidence.
Uh-huh.
Now, we may fail, argumentative.
Mm-hmm.
We may fail on the express warranty, but we cannot go along with Ricks because there was evidence of an express warranty in this case, unlike Ricks. Ricks had no evidence of assumption. Wagner had evidence of express. Whether or not she relied on it or not, or the learned intermediary or not, we cannot separate this proposition to my union. And the view here tells that Ricks doesn't apply because injected in Ricks was an issue of which there was no evidence and entirely inappropriate. We can't say that to Wagner. The Wagner needs to say express was appropriate. There were representations made. The issue here is did she rely, was it required, even under the statute, is it required or not?
Well, if there were no evidence of appropriate reliance, then it would be analogous to Ricks, wouldn't it?
No, I disagree.
Okay.
I mean, the reason I'm saying it's not analogous is because in Ricks there was no basis for the assumption charged in fact or in law. It never should have been given. In our case, it should have been given, but we may have failed on proof. I think that's about as good as I can come to this.
Thank you.
Your question, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Finally, and with this argument, I wanted to say, Your Honor, that the there's an indication of error here, is there not? I mean, there was no special interrogatory. These facts are uncontroverted. There were more than four issues in the case. The jury came back with a general verdict. The plaintiff asked for three separate verdicts in the case. The defendant objected to three separate verdicts. Inviting him here, not only that, but the defendant, knowing that the court had refused separate verdicts, failed to attach interrogatories, and request the court to do special interrogatories to test the general verdict. So you have an invited error here. They should have joined in three separate verdict forms. Therefore, you would have known how the jury returned, whether it was abstract or negligent or implied warranty or express warranty or what. So they overlooked that point, and that, of course, the big failure was a failure to have instruction testing the jury's verdict. And I think there's an implied and invited error in that particular point. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eiler. Ms. Pete Walker.
Fully developed by both sides, and this court has had an opportunity to get it right. It is clear that the cause of action by the mother The actual instruction given appears to be 12-13 of Wagner's 10th, which is part of the health decision. That instruction was a UCC contract reached of an express and implied warranty of personability and fitness for a particular purpose. It had nothing to do with this action and was prevented from extending the concession. There's no mention in that instruction of warranty made to the legal profession. No mention of London Media. No mention of the word reliance, because it's a contract instruction based on the party's contract, their agreement, the basis of their bargain. The Sixth District opinion in this case, perhaps you'd be best explained, see them as skipping a step. Instead of leaping right to the issue whether the evidence supported any kind of breach of express warranty cause of action, the court perhaps should have said, the instruction given over objection in this case was a contract warranty instruction and was improper and prejudicial and required a new trial. But in that new trial on remand, by the way, you could not even instruct on the proper tort breach of warranty instruction, because that cause of action requires reliance as an essential element, and there was no evidence of reliance in the case. Seen in that light, it is clear that the Sixth District issued a correct decision in this case to be remanded for a new trial, and this appeal to be issued, and this property is granted. Now,
were there no express warnings by the inspector?
There were not, Your Honor. Not the type of express warning that would give rise to a full cause of action. Mr. Ives is absolutely correct in that the express warning they alleged to have been made to the medical profession was that this was a good, promising course of treatment for acne. Your Honor, that is not an express warning.
What is, in your opinion, an express warranty in this field? What would be required?
To be perfectly honest, Your Honor, I'm not sure that's the appropriate cause of action in the field of Christian Johnson. Let me explain why. In order to obtain FDA approval, manufacturers have to go through an arduous testing process to prove that their prescription drug is safe and efficacious for its proposed use. The FDA will not approve the drug unless it concludes that the drug is safe and efficacious for its proposed use. That, Your Honor, is an express warranty, at least as good as promising treatment for acne. Now, if this court were to create a cause of action that every time a drug is said by the manufacturer to be safe and efficacious for its proposed use, which it does every time it gets FDA proposal, and that is made as a representation for the medical industry, which it is a representation every time a drug says it may be prescribed to consumers, then you're going to have a breach of express warranty every time the user of that prescription drug is injured. You're going to have absolute liability. This is only one of the many ramifications.
It also could be if the user was not cured. I mean, it's cured by what it had hoped to, you know, they still had acne.
And, Your Honor, that's why the drug prescription field toward area has developed into an area that's not what you say, it's what you omit. It's the advocacy of the warning. This is an inherently unsafe drug that has been declared safe and efficacious for the purposes of intended. That's a very specialized field. Now, it's clear that the usual express warranty factors simply don't fit. And what we are urging
is... Shock, it's just like a number of things. And any one of those.
So let's get to that.
I agree with Mr. Wright that the Rich versus Jackson says that collusion will not apply in cases where there's no factual evidence on the claim to go to the jury. That is a distinction. Whether you have two claims that follow the factual support, they went to the jury with the instructions along on one, or whether you have one claim that didn't have a factual support. Why is that a distinction? The best explanation of it. Denver versus Church, 129 Ohio State 1. And that's the case where the plaintiff had a negligence and a willful negligence claim, and the court said there was no support factually for the willful negligence claim or insufficient support. Therefore, that claim did not go to the jury, and there was prejudice in sitting that case to the jury. And it says this is the reason. The court said it's ill to send a claim to the jury for which there is no factual evidence. There is prejudicial error when that instruction tends to mislead the jury and induce the jury to think that the facts in the case in the opinion of the judge are sufficient for this claim to be a claim that can be decided by the jury. These are facts in the record that can be decided by the jury. And that's the question.
But why, I'm having trouble with the concept of why. It seems that, and I don't know that the case you're referring to, I look at it, but it seems that that in order to follow the reasoning to call this prejudicial, one has to speculate that the jury went right to the express warranty and never got. I mean, the brief says, you know, here's why it's wrong. They never got to the failure to warn. That's speculative, isn't it?
I don't disagree that it's speculation, Your Honor, because you often have the document when issues come in strictly intertwined, and issue on one requires the verdict. It becomes painful. And that's what happens in this case. When a court of law stands up to the jury and tells the jury to say, there are facts in this record to support this claim, when there are none, there you have a situation where the entire process becomes painful. There you have a prejudice.
Is your argument, I mean, the two-issue rule says that if you have two distinct causes of action and the instructions on one are proper and the ones on the other are not, so be it, live with it. Your best argument here is that these are inextricably entwined causes of action?
No, Your Honor. My argument is that there are two situations that this court has considered the two issues. One would apply to one of each other. They will apply if you have two independent causes of action, and both of them will not be supported by the record of the jurisdiction.
That's it.
But the charge of the running of one, and the other is when there's no evidence support. Now, the reason that I think this court, quite frankly, should dismiss this case is because this is a whole new category. This goes beyond the Briggs case because the instruction given on this record, on the 1993 trial record, was not only not factually supported, but had no legal basis. It was a contract charge. So now you have the court telling the jury not only that they should assume fact not in the record, but they should apply a rule of law that doesn't even apply in this age, merchantability of the product. Under those situations, it becomes certainly subpoenaed. So I would suggest that this court need not benefit from our by explicating the two issues. On a case where I would submit that you almost never going to have a case where a jury instruction is being legally more passionate.
You and the Court of Appeals say the instruction should not have been given. What instruction in this case could have been given on the basis of this, of the facts of this case, if there is not, I mean, really what you're saying is that the end of plaintiff's evidence should have been dismissed.
Mm-hmm. On the facts of this case, on the proper claim that the plaintiff has and the one that the plaintiff must prove and ask you to warn you, the justice Cook mentioned in that Mr. Ryder responded, yes, when you have an adequate warning case, you have to prove it.
And of course, if you stick that little piece of paper in the bottle or the box, it's an adequate warning.
Adequate warning has to do, of course, with the entire medical warning and the complexity that the physician or medical practitioner uses to use his judgment to determine what's best under the client, the patient, doctor relationship, given the symptoms and that patient. So, Your Honor, I think, quite frankly, that the Sixth District probably says this case is vacated and remanded for new trial consistent with these proceedings. To the extent that there is a claim that's attempted to be made different from the contract breach warranty claim that was asked and given, that merits fuller development of the record at that trial. The final issue is...
To wit, the warranty issue.
Yes,
sir. But then we get right back up here, wouldn't we, and say the warranty issue should not have been there and the instruction shouldn't have been given because this isn't a warranty case.
I think, Your Honor, that's absolutely true, that the express warranty in this case, the express in Tony versus Home product requires reliance and requires a representation made directly to the consumer. I think that the court properly held there was no evidence of reliance and that the Tony's tort cause of action should not be there. I also think there was no evidence of any kind of breach of express warranty made to anyone that would be sufficient for injury in this case, because the only warranty that's alleged is that this is a policy product for the treatment of acne. That is not the type of express warranty in a case where the only injury claimed here is that if this drug was prescribed with medicine and the synergistic effect of the two caused harm and there was no warning in the patent center. There was no allegation that there was no benefit of the bargaining piece here. There was no allegation that she was injured because Accutane was not an efficacious or promising treatment for acne. Allegation was she was injured because these two drugs were prescribed together and had a synergistic effect. That's the only claim, that was the only evidence, and therefore there was no evidence to support any form.
Having dissented in this case, I wasn't sure after I read it just exactly what he meant, but let me ascribe to what he said, whatever it was. Why is he wrong? Judge Abood. He had dissented in this case, didn't he? Judge Abood, the third judge in the Court of Appeals. Didn't he dissent?
Yes, he did.
Okay. What did he say?
He said that he thought that, well, he distinguished Rick versus Jackson on the fact that it was an assumption of the Rick case, where the assumption of the Rick defense was given, it was not given. And beyond that, there really wasn't a lot of explanation as to the purpose of the two-issue rule, the distinction in the two-issue rule between cases that are back to the point and those are not, or why the two-issue rule would be applicable in this case. And there was no question, certainly no consideration of whether or not the jury process was tainted by instruction that was either legally or factually supported in the record. Thank you, Your Honor. I see my time is up. I would only ask that, although the bar, I think, that seeks clarification receivable to the right case, that this is a case involving standards for the plaintiff, not the liability of the co-defendant. And again, this case should be remanded for a new trial, which is exactly what the Sixth District did.
Thank you, Steve Walker. Ms. Ivory, you have a little over a minute to rebuttal. Of Accutane was another treatment that caused the injury to the plaintiff, isn't it?
Not entirely correct, Your Honor. We, in our very warm claim, there was actually a few allegations. One of them was Accutane did not have been given because there was no one to use it from the cerebrum, and that it did not have been given concomitantly. And it was that basis that makes the big liability that was warm charge. But Roche was great pain specifically to get to the doctors and get to the public. They gave the doctors, including Dr. Bernhardt, brochure that were not only for the doctor but for the patient.
Does that make it an express warranty case?
It's a client. It's a client and the consumers that they rely on. And Dr. Bernhardt clearly relied upon the education and the information he got from Roche.
Is your express warranty claim founded and to prove it, is it required to use the learned intermediary doctrine?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was that argued in the trial court?
Your Honor, learned intermediary was argued throughout the trial. The expert testified to that. The court judge refused it throughout the entire trial. I find out at least 7 times that Rose and Jimmy went to the doctor to warn the doctor of the adverse effects that anyone should have known.
Mr. Eiler said that we ought to adopt the learned intermediary doctrine. I thought we had done that in Ohio.
Yes, Your Honor, but yeah, we believe that the court should adopt the learned intermediary express warranty because of the unique situation in prescription drugs that the court has recognized the reality that the plaintiffs and the consumers rely on the physicians and they rely on the information given to the physicians by the drug company. In this case, Dr. Burkhardt clearly relied. In fact, he sued Roche, saying that I relied upon the information that he gave me. So on those instances of Roche, type and in fact is that that's information to the doctor and the consumer. So on those facts, we believe that the express is the
Just one more question. Was it Mrs. Wagner's viewpoint that the instruction that was given, the UCC instruction, was the correct one for this express warranty claim? And especially in light of the view that it required the jury to look to the learned intermediary for the reliance.
Your Honor, the third ticket as a whole.
Well, I'm talking just about the one that said benefit of the bargain.
Your Honor, we believe that those several partially worded charge, and it's taken as a whole, was the correct charge. And if it wasn't the correct charge, Your Honor, we believe intrinsically argue that the risk, the general forehead, the crucial would apply in a limited verdict. And we believe, Your Honor, that we believe that this court should overrule the decision by the court of appeal to reinstate the entire verdict of $350,000 in favor of the plaintiff.
Thank you, Ms. Tyler. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.